HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. For $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter MTV35 when you subscribe. So go check it out at HelloFresh.com. Hi, this is Tavi Gevinson, founder and editor-in-chief of RookieMag.com, and this is the Rookie Podcast. Since it's our very first episode ever, I'm so excited, let me tell you a bit about what Rookie is, if you don't already know. Rookie is a website and book series for and largely by teenagers. I started it in 2011 when I was 15 because I didn't see any publications for teens or young women that I felt respected our intelligence, had actual teens writing for it, and just addressed what me and my friends and my internet friends were going through, honestly. So we started publishing essays, photography, diary entries, articles, comics, all kinds of things about what we were going through. And a lot of people seemed to relate to it, and then they'd start contributing too. And it was like this great endless feedback loop of people supporting each other and identifying with each other. Rookie's been around for over 5 years now, and our readers have always been asking for a podcast, which is very exciting to me because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I feel like they have taught me how to be a person. There are moments from some of them that I first heard years ago and still bring up all the time in conversation or in something I'm writing or just to remind myself. Like, my favorite shows make me feel like I'm listening to anything from a college lecture to a very private conversation, when really I'm just at home alone deciding whether or not to keep a moldy humidifier. This week we'll show you how Rookie is going to sound. For our recurring segment, Ask a Grown, writer and theater critic Hilton Alves will answer one of your questions about finding a career.
I think it's too late and you're already an artist because you're asking all the questions of an artist.
And before that, we have a conversation I recorded with Lord a few weeks ago.
2016 was the year of realizing stuff, as captioned by Kylie Jenner. Because 2016, everyone was kind of frozen. 2017 is like, I want to feel everything, good or bad.
And we'll continue to discuss the human experience through the teenage lens. I'm 20 now. I'm not a teenager anymore, but I'm also not really an adult, and I don't know if anyone is. So maybe by the end of this season, we'll all know how to be people, or at least just not know, together. Some of my favorite interviews I've done so far include George Saunders, Heaven and Tracy from the podcast Another Round, the filmmaker slash artist slash writer Miranda July, the New York Times' Jenna Wortham and Jasmine Hughes. I am really excited for you to hear them and many more. All right, don't go anywhere, which I'm realizing doesn't really work to say in a podcast because it's not like you're sitting down watching TV. But just don't press stop because we're going to hear my interview with Lord after this break. Hey guys, real talk. I'm a little sluggish today because I don't know how to feed myself like a real person. I just go hour to hour snacking, eating bowls of cereal. I don't know how to just like prepare a normal adult meal. This is not me trying out really bad stand-up on you. This is actually me telling you about HelloFresh, something I should learn about. It's a meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient because it basically does all the work for you. There's no shopping at a supermarket because HelloFresh delivers food to your doorstep in a special insulated box. You literally don't even have to measure anything because they do it for you with every ingredient. HelloFresh sends you all the ingredients you need along with a dietitian-approved recipe. It'll make you look like a chef even if you aren't one. And if you're a great cook, even better, because you get all the fun without the hassle. You just get to post a cute pic and be like, I made this. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter MTV35 when you subscribe. Cut to like me at HelloFresh putting in our promo code and being like, I heard about this on my own podcast. That's HelloFresh.com. Our first guest on the Rookie podcast is Ella Yelish O'Connor, but you probably know her as Lorde. Ella put out her first studio record in the fall of 2013. It was called Pure Heroine. For many of you, this is not new information. It was a huge success. It was nominated for a Grammy. The song Royals made her the youngest solo performer to have a song at the top of the Billboard 100 since Tiffany in 1987. Most importantly, we all loved that album so much. That was when I first met Ella, actually, because I interviewed her for the Rookie website about it. And we became friends after that, and she's been really rad over the years and supporting Rookie. She wrote stuff for Rookie Yearbooks 3 and 4 about her songwriting process and all of that. And I wanted to talk to her more and more and more about that, because this year she's putting out a new record. It's called Melodrama. It's out June 16th. So far, two singles have come out, Greenlight and Liability. You probably love them, like I do. It's okay if you don't. It's not a cult. It's fine. We talked a few weeks ago for like over 2 hours, and there's so much we wanted to include. So we're gonna play you part one of that conversation now, and part two will come out closer to her album release in the summer. Just as an FYI, there's cursing, as there are in articles on our site and whatever. So for now, here's me and Lorde talking about growing up, getting personal in your writing, and of course, her new single that's already out called Greenlight.
Hey, Ella.
Hi, Tabby. This is really funny. I guess we have recorded hangs before.
Yeah.
We've had hangs that have eventually been transcribed.
That's right. It was over Skype.
Over Skype,
I remember that day like it was yesterday. Okay, no, but actually, hi, this is Lorde. This is the Rookie podcast. I'm Tavi. I'm not Lorde. You're Lorde.
Hello.
Do you
thanks
prefer
for, coming to interview me?
Oh, thanks for doing this.
Anytime.
Yeah, like, are you ever like, call me Lorde to people in life?
I'm not ever. I haven't gotten to that. It still feels a little bit like when someone calls me Lorde, they don't know me or they aren't. I'm like, you don't know me. You know
right.
that person.
Do you like having that separation?
I don't know. I like to think that I am Ella in both things.
Yeah.
In both Ella time and Lorde time. So I think that I'm okay to be Ella all the time.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, it makes me feel weird. I don't know, I'll be like on a photo shoot and someone will be like, oh, Lorde wants to wear the other shoes. And I'm like, I don't feel known. I'm sure they're just like, maybe she just wants to be called that. I don't know. It's weird. Having a pseudonym is so weird.
Well, I was thinking about it when watching your SNL performance and like, I was like, oh, I think I've only had this experience watching like, I guess this is something that Sam, our friend who you know, calls like movie star acting, which is where you're like, oh, I totally at one time believe that like this person is Winona Ryder, but I also believe that they're Lydia Deetz.
Oh, wow.
Like that is probably my favorite kind of acting. And I was it's like she's Ella and she's Lorde.
Oh,
and it's like 100%
best.
Of both.
That makes me so happy.
That is something that you like want to
that's
feel.
The dream.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that's a nice. I mean, I would hope that people would think that I was not just myself kind of tooling around, because I feel like my self is so boring.
What?
I'm lame. I mean, no, I feel like when I say like I'm lame, it sounds like I'm trying to like be that person who's
right.
like I'm just like you. Like I'm lame and I like, you know, my feet smell also. And it's like, no, I'm just like, I feel like I need to say that less, but really I'm just like, I don't know. I feel such a sense of like ordinary. I feel so ordinary all the time. I'm just like, oh man,
it's weirdly difficult to say something that does feel like, you just pointed out, like self-deprecating, because now it seems like some kind of strategy for like seeming relatable.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's smarter than falling for that at this point though, so you
right.
know what I mean, like everyone's so savvy with how they digest famous people and their personalities and their beliefs that I think hopefully we're in a post like I can fool people with that world.
Yeah.
Like I, you know, I am famous, which is a crazy word to use about oneself, but I guess it is true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, you know, you realize that people attribute a sort of sheen to famous people. I know I do, and I know a lot of famous people. I still find myself thinking that their private moments or their ugly moments are far less ugly than mine. You
right.
know? I guess I don't think anyone is above feeling like, oh my God, should I text this person? Do they even like me? Like,
right.
Have I arrived at this thing, and do I feel kind of giant and ugly, and that my voice is kind of booming loud? Like, you know, when you get to something, I mean, you don't have this because you're very tiny, but I sort of find myself like hunching down because I feel like a giant.
Really?
Which I think comes from being the height that I am since I was 10. And all the boys are much shorter than me, and I
right.
was kind of be like, boom, 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 here I am, like a big giant in the room. And I don't know, I just, I feel like, yeah, I'm very aware of the kind of starkness and regular nature of my life in a wonderful way, and I really treasure it.
I mean, I think everyone has some version of that. Like, I was always the short, it's kind of like the inverse, where like I was always the shortest kid in my class and got teased a bit for it, and then would be like really mean as a response, like was
right.
a bit of a bully as a response,
right.
and was also very like, I'll show you. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know if all of this would have happened if I didn't have some kind of like Napoleon complex.
Wow. But I mean, of course, you must feel the same, right? Like, I'm sure some kids probably think like Tavia's really sparkly and her life is sparkly because you turn it into, you take moments of pain or difficulty and you write them into these very clear, very sharp, beautiful, often beautiful moments. And I think that when you take your life and you put it in these, try and frame it in these sort of beautiful ways, it's easy for people to think that your life must therefore be beautiful. You
right.
know what I mean? Whereas like, I know that you just tool around and you like, I see you when you're like wearing your pajamas and you're like, I know that you, just by looking at you, I know that you feel the way that I feel, which is
right.
like an ordinary person.
Right, right.
And I know from your writing, that's how you feel also.
No, often. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's easy to sort of water emotion down to like just beauty when you're just taking it in as a song or essay
For
or
sure.
like line of poetry. But like that is, but the actual experience is like, is like painful, and then probably take some time to sort of alchemize into something that's actually beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was reading stuff you said about your song Liability.
Oh.
And, which I
Great.
Love.
Do you remember when I played that to you in your house?
Yeah, I do.
For our listeners listening right now, Tavi was one of the first people to hear songs from the new album. One of the first people to hear it who didn't work on it. I think you heard it before my family, maybe.
Oh,
you're
that,
like, whoa.
Fam.
I sat in Tavi's beautiful apartment, and
Aww.
I that was such a nice apartment. And I played you a few songs, and I remember them feeling like so. They felt real when I played them for you, and your response was so beautiful. You were just like, like this is like yeah you just
yes,
like really reacted in the best possible way. It made me so happy. But I remember playing that song to you, and it was really crazy hearing it outside of my kind of brain and my workplace, and hearing it in front of somebody. I was like, whoa, this is a trip.
Well, I mean, I almost like can't believe you would expect anything else, just because I was like, you know, like
no,
everyone
nice.
So excited.
It's very nice.
But I also feel like, I mean, I think the way you framed it was like, oh, it's not to put words in your mouth, but like people's, like as I become more known or whatever, I like the people around me, their privacy is compromised and whatever. And I was listening to it again, and I was like, that is, can be in some ways, like there's a level where that is about literally like privacy in terms of fame and like being photographed or whatever,
mm-hmm.
like you and your friends. But there's also a part of it where it really just feels like, I feel like probably everyone at some point just feels like they're too much. And there's something too about the kind of something in that song about the way it can feel if you do write about your life and you do try to translate these moments into like a sentence or something that feels beautiful, like how that can feel really lonely.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. I remember when we were writing that, I felt like there was something to it which kind of like twanged in the back of my brain. I was like, oh, this feels like high school. I was like, oh God, like, because, you know, that is that quintessential high school feeling of just, it's that thing of walking into the room and being a giant all of a sudden. Oh. I'm too much, you know, and people are gonna pull back, make other plans. And you're like, I get it. Why wouldn't they? I'm too much. And I know we've talked a lot about friends or loved ones maybe are like, you know, as writers, you kind of run into this thing where people are like, oh, you wrote about that, or that wasn't how I saw it, or whatever. And I remember we exchanged a lot of kind of little notes about writers saying like, you know, this isn't documentary. Like, if we were doing that, it would be that. Like, that's your experience of a thing.
Right. I always go back to the Vivian Gornick, which I think I sent you, where she's like, it's mine. It's not yours.
Yes,
it's not a historical document. It's not a police record.
Totally.
I wrote,
there's a song on the record and we wrote it right at the end, and it's like one of my favorite. I have so many favorites on the record, but the line is, "Bet you rue the day you kissed a writer in the dark," because it's like, what did you think was gonna happen that night? You know, and that was sort of, that's full on, eh? But that was sort of my way of reconciling, like, you know, there's an element of like, oh God, you know, first thinking you feel guilt, or you feel,
right,
oh, am I telling it right? It's, you know, it's all those things that we talked about. And then it's like, no one gets to make you feel inferior or shitty for it's like, that's what happens when you kiss a writer in the dark. That's,
right.
That's what's going to happen. In some ways, I see making work as like, I just need to get it out of my head to in front of me. And when I can see it all, and that's, you know, obviously the song being written, then I start to make sense of whatever it was that happened. It's like, I'm a very visual person, and sometimes I'll put paper up on the wall and write out a song as it comes together. And so I can see all of the, I need all the words to kind of wash over me or just kind of hit me, and then I feel like I have a much clearer picture of the song. And to me, it's like, yeah, it's definitely never about poking anyone in the side, you know.
No. I also think like the work gets better when, like, I mean, I think most beliefs I've tried, like my positions on most things kind of like go to different extremes until they settle in a kind of comfortable
happy medium.
Yeah. And like, I was probably at first like, it's so wrong to write about people, and then I was like, no, like, fuck you, I can do whatever I want. And then probably like the work got better when I was like, it's not really about like your motives or like vengeance, or just like make the work that feels the most true to life.
Well, make what needs to be made as well. Like, I think the work needs to be made. We don't just, like, I'm definitely not just here because I'm here because I enjoy making songs and because it pushes my buttons, but we've talked about this, like, there's a certain type of creative who makes things to survive. And it's like, the things need to be made, like,
yeah.
This is so intense.
No.
Couple of intense girls sitting at a table,
yeah, just
airing
so
their intense feelings.
Emotional, you can't even believe.
2017's the year of emotion.
Oh.
2016 was the year of realizing stuff, as captioned by Kylie Jenner. 2017 is the year of emotion, not necessarily skewed good or bad, just like this outpouring of emotion. Because 2016, everyone was kind of frozen. It was such an intense year, and I feel like everyone had to sort of shell themselves off from the world in a way so as not to take on too much and poisoned. And I feel like 2017 is like, I want to feel everything, good or bad. Like, it's just outpouring, I feel like.
What brought you to this conclusion?
I don't know. I feel like all of my friends and everyone, I'm like, this is what's going on this year. Mm-hmm. Whether it's like, whether it's super good, super bad. If you think about your life, I bet you'll be like, maybe this is true.
Ooh, I really like this. So do you write out the words on paper and then they're on your wall? Or like, what are, I like knowing that you have these other, that seems like less, not straightforward, but like just standard than the way I think most songs are written.
Right. Well, so I write everything on my computer. In my like notes section, which is super like sterile and not romantic. I'm gonna have no like bags of like notebooks, and you keep diaries, which I am very impressed with. But
not anymore,
I
honestly now I'm like, I just want to type. Keep
really
going.
Interesting. Yeah, no, but I'm a visual person, and I feel like I often need to kind of see something outside of that. So at one point I covered my kitchen table in New Zealand with, I printed out everything I had for the album. And this was like maybe a year ago or slightly less, but I printed everything out, and I printed out all these bits that I thought were cool and like little lines that I thought were cool. And I color coded everything in terms of like all the sad moments of the record. And like a song could be totally happy and have one little sad blue area. Like, it was like I would literally pick out like moments in songs or whatever. Oh, there would be, you know, really happy ones. There'd be like ones about partying. Literally partying had a color, because I was like,
what color was it?
I think it was purple. Uh-huh. I was like, there can't be too much, what if there's too much parties music? It's all about parties on the record. And I colored out the whole thing, and it was covering the table for a long time. And anytime I would have people over, I'd have to like throw a big towel over me, like, or like just be like, don't look at the table, like my whole life is there, you might see yourself there, stay away for your own good. Which was hilarious. And then later on, as I started traveling, I remember I figured out a way of summarizing each of the songs that we had for the album. And like Green Light was like, I whisper things, the city sings them back to you, those rumors, they have big teeth, I wish I could get my things and just let go, I'm waiting for it. It was something like that, just like a few lines from the song, which is like enough to be able to read the whole song in short form, you know. And I did that for every song on the record, and I could read them in like, you know, it was like all of 200 words to read the whole album. And it was really helpful in terms of being like, what haven't I said that I know I'm gonna want to include on this record that I haven't figured out a way to say. It was like a really good way of kind of seeing the gaps. And I would put that up in every hotel room that I was in for a long time. And then like, I remember it was like, for a long time we had these gaps, and then I got to New York this trip, which was at the end of January, and I very quickly filled the last two spaces on the record. And I said everything that I had known wasn't on my big bit of paper on the wall for 6 months, and I was like, that's it. The story's told in terms of, you know, what I need to actually write lyrically. And that was amazing. It was such a good feeling. It, yeah, I was like, ooh, okay. I'm going to snip the end off the, I don't know what that metaphor is.
Umbilical cord.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah. Probably an umbilical cord. Yeah, the umbilical cord is snipped. No, actually, I feel like at this point, I'm like, I keep making this joke to everyone. I'm like, she's crowning. She's crowning. And everyone's like, yuck. But I was like present for a delivery of a baby. My friend had a baby. Uh-huh. And I literally saw a baby crowning. And so now I'm like, that's where I'm at. She's crowning. And in a couple months, she'll slide right out. Yuck. Sorry, guys. Sorry. I'm really making your podcast very cool and chic.
I love it so much. I remember right after Green Light came out, you were like talking about how Like, it's poppier than your other songs on a very superficial, like, sonic level. But it is also unconventional as a pop song. And you were, like, kind of talking about the feedback you had gotten about that before it even came out. And you were like, this is what the song is asking to be.
Yeah. That's I remember I said that's how it was born. And it truly was. Like, I have this. Wait, I should find this. This is actually really cool. Do you want to hear something cool?
Yeah.
I'll play it into the microphone.
Cool.
It's, I found this recording of us coming up with the song.
Ooh.
And it's kind of amazing. And you'll hear, like, this is exactly how the song was born. It's like, it's a fascinating thing. Hang on.
Oh, where my is God. It? June
16th. Very first green light, it's called.
Oh my God.
It's long. Let me see. Oh, so okay. So we had gone to a concert. We'd gone to see Florence and the Machine the night before. And neither of us heard the song. And we couldn't, I mean, I couldn't tell you what it was. But her player did this big kind of jangly movement with her hands on the piano. And it was literally the physicality of that movement that became the way we played the way Jack played that. It definitely, like, it didn't come from anything musical. It was literally seeing her hands kind of banging down. So this is what he's talking about.
Hearing it, like, very, like, British, like, kind of like the French thing, like.
This is the day we wrote it.
Love that.
1, 2, 3,
hope they bite you. Thought you said that you would always be in love. But you're not in love no more. Did it frighten you how we kissed when we danced on the light up floor? On the light up floor. And you. Wait, what's the note? No, what is it?
So this was our
like James Taylor
pre originally.
Starts to like filter out.
Da, 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 da.
In my mind.
But honey, I'll be seeing you every show. Wow. Honey, I'll be seeing you everywhere I go.
So that is, you see what I mean? That's exactly how that song was born. It truly had no other form. And so when people say, for any argument that is like, oh, you know, she went pop or whatever, it's like, that's just the inside of my brain. And that's how a song like that is literally, that's how it enters the world and that's how it, you know, goes out into the universe.
So when you sing it now or you hear that, does it still feel connected to the real life thing that inspired it? Or is it like totally a new beast?
It's funny, I think that when you make a pop song out of something, it kind of, I think it's a bit of both. I'm picturing like a hand holding a forearm, holding a hand. It's like a weird, like one of those tarot cards or something. I think that it, obviously you pick moments to include, you know, you edit a situation, you edit a month, you edit a year or whatever and put it into a song. And in some ways it, I mean, no, I think I still see the situation fully, but I think with a song like that, you know, you listen to it over and over and you relive doing your makeup in a different person's car and you relive that feeling of, she thinks you love the beach. She thinks you love the beach. That's not true. You don't love the beach. You don't love the beach. You know, you relive these little moments that,
yeah.
You know, that obviously aren't like the fullness of the situation. But I think that song really, I think all my best songs helped to kind of crystallize something that I was feeling and sort of pull it all into a centralized place, you know, where it might have been spread out before. I feel like it comes together and it crystallizes and I see what it was that I was feeling for the first time. I mean, in the case of that song, I didn't know I felt that way until we wrote the song. It was like very much like, oh, right, that's how it is. And so with a song like that, I hear it and I still feel like it crystallized something important for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Isn't that funny, that voice recording?
I loved hearing that so much.
This is Rookie the Podcast, and there's more coming up after this break.
So how do you, like, stop time in order to write about your life?
Huh, interesting question. So I kind of started writing the record after I went through a breakup. It was like the floodgates just opened and all of a sudden I wasn't even writing about that situation. Mm-hmm. I felt so whole and singular and like, I felt like I had like half of myself in the sun for a long time. And now it was like, oh my God, like it's all good in the sun. And I could kind of, I don't know. I just instantly felt very creative and very productive and wrote a lot. And then I kind of wrote a lot in that first like kind of 6 month period of being single. And it was really interesting. And like, you know, to be writing the last songs, which I wrote, you know, only a couple of months ago, mm-hmm. It's interesting to kind of look back on the period that we were writing about, which was, you know, now a year ago, a lot of it. And it kind of is, I'm glad we took so long because it meant we were able to sort of, I feel like I was able to look back on those situations from a year ago more fully and ask the questions that I maybe hadn't been, and that maybe I'd been having too much fun to ask at the time, or that I was too sad to ask at the time, or whatever, you know. I was, you know, it's nice to be able to kind of look back with an even head, having come out of, you know, a fun, crazy, heartbreaking, turbulent period.
Mm-hmm.
My thing that I do is I do all the things that I write about in New Zealand and I come to America and I write about them. So I've bar a couple of small moments on the record, which are very much retrospective, I really don't write about my time in America very often. And I don't know why that is. I guess I'm just still very much like New Zealand is where I'm from. And so I guess there is an element of this freezing of time when I, you know, will be in New Zealand for 2 months over summer and then I'll come here for 3 months and write about everything I did those months ago. You know, I don't write about anything that happens in the time when I'm in New York, really, but I think that the separation of those two places and states of mind means that I'm able to, like, I feel like I would never write, I would pre-write some stuff in New Zealand, like, details that would happen, you know, during a night or the morning after, or, you know, being in the car on the way somewhere and looking at somebody and writing something down, you know. But I feel like I don't know if I would have been able to write the songs and see the pictures as clearly as I do when I come here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like how some people don't like to work at home, you know. It's like good to just go somewhere, even if you just go to a coffee shop, like, because it can be hard to work surrounded by your things and your life and all of these little markers of yourself and other people. So I guess time does stop in a way, but I kind of like it. It sort of feels like limbo. And when I come here, it can be quite solitary, and it's often like, I feel like it's very cold. It's been very cold for the last kind of wee while since I've been coming here, and I'll sort of spend a lot of time by myself, and, you know, I'll be living in these big kind of strange hotels, and, you know, I go to the gym in the middle of the night and go for a walk, and it feels weirdly like, I feel like it's like a monk or something. I'm like very, it's very disciplined. It's really, I almost never, like, you know, party here. And then when I go home, all I do is just like, I'm just like a teenage boy. I love to party. I'm just like, I feel like my friends in New Zealand forget that I have any kind of like formal employment commitments. They're like, Ella is just that, like, Ella has like a house weirdly and is just like really nice and wants to like make drinks for everyone all the time. Like, that's just like who I am down there.
You said sometimes you'll write in your phone as these events are unfolding. Yeah. Is there ever a part of you that's like, this could be material? Or does that ever turn off?
No, I think that that turns off. I think that I write, the writing feels symptomatic of my life. I mean, you just realize something looking at someone. You can be sitting across from somebody and realize they will never love you like you want them to, or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and it's that shock of that realization. It's like, well, I gotta write this down because this is an insane moment, you know.
Right.
It's definitely a strange thing.
That's probably better you're not engineering, just because I find like you can't be that inspired by something that came from your own head.
Well, that's the thing. I think the second I was outsmarting myself, I would not feel super inspired. I think because life continues to surprise me, I keep having things to write about. And I think like a lot of people who, you know, I know you were like this because you were a tiny genius. When you were maybe like somebody called you like gifted at school, you mm-hmm. know, and you were good at things and you were quick and like schoolwork came quickly to you and you kind of always could sort of get things done. And you were always like, in a lot of ways, like I think intelligent young people have an easy ride and a lot of us are very lazy. I was a very, very lazy mm-hmm. Young person, you know, going through school or, you know, doing stuff outside of school. I feel like I could just get it done. And I think that the fact that the one thing that you can't get done or nail or clock is being a person, being alive, life will never go the way you want it to. And you can't choose and you can't ace it. And I think that that is something that is the second I realized that, oh, you know, because obviously when you're 13 and you're, you know, intelligent, you feel like the king of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of around the time that you realize, oh, none of this is going to go the way I decide it will go. And I think that was the moment where I really got hooked on just like being alive. It's like drugs. You're just like, oh my God, like, I can go outside and the sun is going to do a certain thing to a person's face and it's going to blow my mind. And that is something that I will never tire of. And that's something that I will always want to try and make sense of in the form of, for me, writing.
Ah, that was Ella, aka Lord. And you should go find her new songs, Greenlight and Liability, wherever you listen to music, or stream, or download. Also, look out for part 2 of that conversation in June. Now it's time for something we're going to do every so often here on the Rookie Podcast, like we do on our website, rookiemag.com. Ask a Grown is where you send us your life problems, like anything you'd like a grown person's advice about, and we put the question to rookie friends. So this week, we are asking grown man Hilton Alls to give us some advice. Hilton is the theater critic for The New Yorker magazine. He's written books titled The Women and White Girls and worked with artists in museums like the Whitney here in New York. He won a Guggenheim Fellowship and he's been nominated for a Pulitzer for his criticism. So he like knows a thing or two, I guess. I know Hilton because he was like a big rookie supporter and reached out, and he's become a kind of mentor slash dad slash uncle slash brother slash teacher to me, and also is maybe one of the only critics of any kind whose ideas about art I think actually make art better.
His criticism is its own form of art, and if you're not already familiar with it, I would recommend it as an example of how writing about something you love can actually be as good as the thing you love. So I could go on and on about that, but today he's going to extend the same kindness and expertise to one of our readers. Here's our first Ask a Groan featuring Hilton Alls.
Are you comfortable answering a question from a young person in need of advice?
Sure, but she doesn't have to take it.
That, fair.
Let's start with that.
Let's start with that.
Okay.
This person wrote in and said, hi, rookie. It's about that time in my life when I need to start thinking about my future career. I'm one of those people who has always gotten straight A's, and because of this, I'm planning to get into a very high science degree after I finish high school. But I find science so difficult and I don't like it. My absolute dream job is to do anything in art, whether it be something in marketing, graphic design, photography, anything. I have loved art since I was tiny. I am an extremely creative person and I've always done art as a subject at school. My parents have always pushed that I need to make a lot of money and become a scientist or something and not become a starving artist and waste my intelligence. I don't know what to do. They put so much pressure on me to do well in school and get into a really prestigious course. If I told them I wanted to work in an art career, they would flip. They have always supported my art as a hobby, just not as a career. My main goal for my career is to just make a heap of money, and I've looked into how much money people earn in art careers, and it's not as much as I hoped. Oh, no kidding. Are my parents right? Should I not waste my intelligence? Do you think I'm just being too lazy and giving up on science because it's hard? How do I tell my parents? Should I even care about how much money I'll earn if it's a job I'll actually enjoy? Please help me.
Yes. Okay. Dear help. I think it's too late and you're already an artist because you're asking all the questions of an artist, which includes, you know, who am I? Mm. What do other people think of me? Mm. I don't care what other people think of me. You have to do the work. Life is very short and very fast and long at the same time. And there is no living with yourself. It's like getting the wrong boyfriend and just say, I'll deal with it for 40 years. It's not the way to go. You're already the artist that you are because you're asking the questions. Mm. If you were a scientist, you wouldn't be asking these questions. Mm-hmm. You're not a scientist, you're an artist. And unfortunately, it's not a profession that's widely valued in this society, but you know what? You have the option. You can go to France one day or even London or Stockholm and be cherished. And don't worry, you'll make a living because you have a lot of energy.
I think that's a wonderful answer.
Yeah, she sounds great. But she's already an artist.
I know. And there's also, it sounds like she's looking at colleges.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I know in high school, they act like you have to know exactly what you're going to do every day for the rest of your life right now.
Right.
But it's just not the case. And I think while you're still able to, without too much, like, financial trouble, try things.
Yeah.
You should.
Yeah.
Especially.
Well, because you're giving yourself the gift of your own imagination and creativity.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people don't have that, and I think that they're threatened by it. So let them be threatened, but do your work. It's not your job. Take care of them.
Ah, that was beautiful. Thank you so much, Hilton. If you want some advice, you can send a voice memo of yourself asking a question to podcast@rookiemag.com. You can record it on your computer or phone, just keep it kind of short, like 1 minute max, and then email it to us. Or if you don't want to hear your voice on the show, or you're talking about someone who will recognize you, you can email your question to us at asked@rookiemag.com. I'm just going to spell it out because I have kind of a lisp. youaskedit@rookiemag.com. Be sure to include your first name or nickname, your age, and your location. Excited to hear from you. Thank you for listening to the first ever episode of the Rookie Podcast. We'll be back next week with more, including an interview with Tracy Clayton and Heaven Nigatu, hosts of one of my favorite podcasts, Another Round.
I like professionally strive to get to like teen me. Because I was just so much more confident, cared so much less about other people. My motto was never settle for less.
That's next week. I'm your host, Tavi Gevinson. If you liked Rookie the Podcast, please give us a rating and review the show on iTunes. We'd love to hear your thoughts as we gear up for the rest of the season. You can find us at rookiemag.com, rookiepodcast.mtv.com, and on Twitter and Instagram at rookiemag. I'm on Twitter and Instagram as well. My handle is Tavi Tulle, T-A-V-I-T-U-L-L-E. And when you're done with all of the tabs and social media and you just can't get enough of our podcast, you should tell a friend about it or tag us in a picture of yourself listening to it or get on the train with a Bluetooth speaker and yell Showtime and then just blast it from the speaker. Street marketing. Viral street marketing. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.
This episode of Rookie was produced by Mukta Mohan, Michael Catano, Kesha Mihailovic, and James T. Green for the MTV Podcast Network. Thanks to Lauren Redding for making the Rookie Podcast happen, to Lena Singer for picking advice questions, and thanks to Maria Inez Go for the portraits and doodles, to Cynthia Merhage for Rookie's logo, to Hattie Stewart for the logo doodles, and to Beth Heckel for the jewels.